The year was 2000, my first pilgrimage to our partner church in Deva, Transylvania. Romania, the country which Transylvania has been part of since World War I, had overthrown the heinous Ceausescu regime less than a dozen years before I visited. Some things had changed with the revolution, but a lot had not. And one of the things that hadn't changed much was the look of the urban areas. Soviet-style block apartment buildings still dominated the cityscapes. Deva, where our partner church is a mid-sized city about the size of Appleton, with plenty of these block apartment buildings even today. One of my most powerful memories of that first trip to Deva was when our four-person delegation ventured into one of those block buildings. We went there to visit with a family who was in the church. The exterior of this block house was characteristically, really the only word is, hideous. And it was clearly shabbily built in the first place. It was not kept up. The entryway, the stairway were dreary. I have this vision like there were bare light bulbs just barely illuminating the place. I had done some work in Chicago's large public housing buildings since torn down in the 1980s, and that's exactly what it felt like. It was depressing to walk up the stairway and through the hallway, and I found myself feeling terrible for our partners who had to live in such a place. Then our hosts opened the door to their apartment and we walked in. Their small, cramped space was so beautiful, so warm, so light, so welcoming, that it felt like maybe we had had some magic fairy powder at the doorway. Words fail me. I really cannot describe how lovely their apartment was. So we sat in the living room, the dining room, chairs crammed around a table, treasured mementos and family photographs on the wall. The table was beautifully set, ample palinka, which is the Transylvanian moonshine, and delicious food filled the table and us to overflowing. More visitors from the congregation kept coming and jamming in. You could hardly move in the room, and suddenly there were two plump one-year-old twins passed around from person to person. I have no idea who they were related to, but it didn't really matter. That evening, in the most unexpected of places, I had one of the most amazing experiences of hospitality and home I've ever experienced. The apartment was overflowing with people, yes, but also with love, with joy, with wonder. And then in a very different setting, on the other side of the world, I had a similar experience a few years ago when I visited our partner village in the Philippines, in Binaybanay, for the first time. That first morning, I was awoken by roosters, which I swear were underneath the bed very early. I stumbled out of bed and wandered toward the bamboo hut of one of the two ministers in the church. It was probably 5:30 in the morning, but everybody was up and about, bustling around, so the minister invited me to climb up the ladder into their bamboo house. And so I did so, and then had the most beautiful, quiet, illuminating, connecting conversation with this family in the early morning. For me, it was one of my most cherished memories from my brief stay in Binaybanay. So in a completely different way, their house oozed the same palpable beauty and brightness and hospitality and joy as the apartment in Deva. It was a home in the full sense of the word. I could feel it in my bones. So for me, one of the many benefits of partnership with Deva and with Binaybanay, one of the many benefits is having my narrow, privileged understanding of home turned upside down. Homes don't have to come in narrow, white, upper middle class boxes. Homes come in all sorts of shapes and sizes and styles. And I don't mean to wax overly romantic here about home. Our world would be better and fairer if people didn't have to live in ugly block apartment buildings, if people didn't have to live in huts of bamboo that subject themselves to terrible danger when there's typhoons. Way too many people in our region, in our nation, as well as around the world, do not have a home at all, or are forced by conditions of poverty or incarceration to call a place home that no one should have to live in. And too many homes, from shacks to mansions, are not places where joy and love and wonder visit, at least on a regular basis, but instead are places of terror and abuse. I get all this, I acknowledge all this, I lament all this. All human beings need and deserve a place to call home. Part of the remarkable resilience of the human spirit is that people are able to create homes in some of the most unlikely and difficult places imaginable. So I think one of the major spiritual challenges for any of us, wherever we live in the world, is to make ourselves at home in the world. And one way we do this is by trying to make wherever we dwell into a home. And of course, this is easier for some than others, but it's possible, I think, in at least a small way, to make a home almost anywhere. One of the coolest things about Scott Peoples, where are you, Scott? There, his work with the Fox Valley Warming Shelter this past year is that you've spearheaded an effort to make that feel a little more like home. You know, in a very difficult place of struggle for many people, it feels more like a home now. To me, home does not mean just the dwelling we live in. It also means the earth the dwelling sits on. It means the ecosystem we're part of and the networks of neighborhood and town. It means the people, as well as the non-humans that we spend our time with. I love Scott Russell Sanders' charge to us all from the reading that Deb shared. Align yourself with the grain of your place and answering to its needs. Align yourself to the grain of the place and answering to its needs. What this says is to make wherever you are a home. Care for it, for its people, its other inhabitants. Connect to your place. Engage with your place. Work for your place to know it, to love it, to improve it, wherever you are. Last summer, I read a new memoir called Household from the author Ann Peters. She wrote it about her childhood home on the eastern shore of Lake Winnebago. However happy I've been in places I've lived since leaving Wisconsin at 18, she writes, I've also been a little ill at ease, as if the last 25 years have been one long slumber party, and I, stiff on the rollaway, must keep one eye open for morning, listen for a rescuing honk in the driveway from the car that will take me home. She goes on, directly in the same passage, on the evening of 9/11, when others were immobilized at the television or frantically dialing their mobile phones, my sister and I comforted ourselves by recounting every detail we could remember of our childhood house. We sat on my couch in Brooklyn, beer bottles sweating in our grip, and walked through each room, looked out every window, until finally, in our minds, we separately and silently closed our bedroom doors. Really struck by that passage, because in it she admits that she really has not developed a sense of home in her adulthood. Going back in her mind to her childhood home amidst the terror of 9/11 was healing, and it was also an indicator that she had not forged a similarly deep connection with Brooklyn or any other place she lived after leaving Wisconsin. And here's the thing, I think a lot of us have the same struggle. We live in an age characterized by increasing mobility, as well as an exponentially increasing number of ways we can vacate wherever we are by going into a virtual world. I think that connecting to place, to building a home wherever we are, is harder today than maybe it's ever been. And to me, it's more and more important that we find a way to do this, each one of us, wherever we live. Connecting to the place we live and building a sense of home there is even more important, I think, in a Unitarian Universalist spirituality. Our faith has always been focused on the here and the now of this world, not whatever happens after we die. We have never been concerned about finding paradise in the next life. We've been concerned in our spirituality and in our justice work on recognizing and creating at least a little slice of paradise here in this world now. The likeliest path to the ultimate good leads through my local ground, Scott Sanders shared in the reading Deb had. I would actually go a step further. I would say that the ultimate ground is my local ground. They are one and the same. Paradise is here. So for more than 24 years, I have called the Fox Valley home. It has not always been easy. I remember flying into the Outagamie County Airport the first time to meet with the Fellowship Search Committee back in 1990. As I neared the airport and looked out the window, I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, it's flat. So I grew up in the rolling hills and river valleys of western Michigan. Hills and mountains have always spoken to me. Could I make a home in this flat land? I wondered. When we moved here in 1990, my wife and I also found that so many people here have large extended families that all still live here. I had never lived in a place with such a strong network of extended families. Networks of friends understandably didn't seem as important or valued here in the fabric of Fox Valley life. People tended to hang out with their kinfolk, and we didn't have any kinfolk here. Would we be able to connect here? Would we be able to make friends? We wondered. And when I moved here, I also had to disengage my mind and my being from the problems and the challenges facing Chicago, where I had lived previously. I had to set about getting to know the problems and the challenges here. And they might not be as obvious as on the south side of Chicago, but there were and are challenges here. I just had to look a bit harder and then dig into the work of trying to help fix them. Slowly, I grew to love this place. We have made a home for ourselves here. The Fox Valley is truly full of wonders and far more than eight, which I shared earlier. Fox Valley has also always had its share of problems and challenges which call its citizens to action. It, for me, has been a fabulous place to live, to work, to make friends, to be engaged as a citizen. And it will always, always be a part of me. But as I prepare to move to St. Louis, I need to remember Scott Russell Sanders' exhortation. I will need to learn to abide in my new place. I will need to align myself with the grain of St. Louis. I will need to learn how to answer its needs. And I'm not here just talking about connecting to the Gateway Arch or the French heritage or the ancient history of the people who made nearby Cahokia their home 1,000 years ago or the mighty, beautiful rivers converging. I will need to learn about and in some ways own as my own problem St. Louis's complicated and tragic history of segregation and racism. The cover of this week's New Yorker magazine captures it poignantly. The arch is half white, half black, but it doesn't meet at the top. What has transpired in Ferguson these past months is not a surprise given the history of St. Louis. It is completely a predictable and logical consequence of what has transpired there for centuries. And so my question for me, will I find a way to contribute in my own small way to that arch coming together? And what I don't want is to feel like I'm in St. Louis on a slumber party, listening for the rescuing honk in the driveway so I can go home to Appleton. My spiritual well-being depends on my becoming grounded in this new home, grounded in this new place, engaged there. The spiritual well-being of each one of us, wherever we live, and in some ways the well-being of our very physical planet Earth, depends on each of us learning to abide where we live. This month, our worship and learning theme is wonder. And it strikes me that wonder is an amazing tool to use in trying to cultivate a sense of home and place. To make a difference in our lives, I think cultivating wonder needs to be a daily spiritual practice. Now, if you're up north in the summer or the winter in Wisconsin, and it's a clear night, the moon's not out, you see those resplendent stars, it's kind of easy to wonder there. Or if you're at Point Beach, or if you're in Door County on a beautiful fall day. The real challenge is cultivating a sense of wonder in the here and now, the ordinary, everyday world in which we live. We need to find ways to wonder in the middle of a cold, dark December night in an apartment in Appleton, or in the middle of mud season in March in our backyard in Oshkosh. That's the challenge. The theologian Howard Thurman talks about needing to seek, in his words, the illumination of wonder over my familiar landscape, revealing ordinary things, fresh glories. So, a great spiritual practice for this month of wonder, I think, is for each of us to seek one fresh glory each day of December. Illuminate your familiar landscape with wonder. Maybe that's actually what the holiday's partly about. Figuring out how to do that in a dark, cold time of the year. So before closing, I want to say that there's one thing that Amy and I are going to do in St. Louis that we failed to do here. We never planted asparagus. So asparagus takes several years to mature. And when we first moved here, we figured, you know, we're only going to be here 4, 5, 6 years. Why bother? And then after 8 years, we moved across town to a new home, and we thought, we're probably not going to be here very long. Let's not plant asparagus. We've been there 16 years. We should have planted asparagus. In St. Louis, we will plant asparagus.